starting at a nerd. Okay, we're going to start today. Our daf is daf dalid. We're going to go back to Gimel Amubet, toward the second third of the page, where it says Mativ Rab Yosef. Okay, if you have the Gemara, the regular Gemara, it's about 10, 12 lines from the bottom. What we learned yesterday was we have this concept in the Mishnah that Rosh Hashanah L'Melachim starts from, the year starts from Nisan. Now, one thing we discussed yesterday, I'll just review a little bit, is that what seems clear is even though in the Torah and throughout all of Tanakh, the months are numbered. Somebody asked yesterday, when did the months, the names, come into play? I looked that up, and now let me remember what I saw. It said that the months started in Galut Bavel. Okay, and we see it from the Tanakh, because we see it in Nehemiah, Ezra Nehemiah, in Esther. It says names of months and numbers. Okay, so it all started from Galut Bavel. That's why the names are Babylonian names. Okay, which we said yesterday. The names of our months are Babylonian. Until then, they're all based on numbers. Okay, it says the first month, the fifth month, the tenth month. Despite the fact that the first month is always Nisan, and that's generally accepted in terms of the names of the months, there's a question about when they counted years. And this goes back to, we were discussing that the concept of time and counting and years was totally different than in our times. They would count based on when the king, right, which king it was, or based on a historical event, based on Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Then they talked about maybe we would count from when the Mishkan was put up. They took historical events, and they counted how many years since that historical event, and it was quite different than the way we count calendars. Now, one thing I think that's going on in this sugya also is that when it comes time, and this I also compared a little bit yesterday to prayer, how prayer was very... was not very clear-cut and organized until really the time of the Amoraim, when they started setting in the Mishnah a little bit, and more so in the time of the Amoraim. At the Mishnah, we're talking about 0 to 200. After the Mishnah was written, the Gemara from around 200 and on, then they really started organizing tefillah in a much more organized fashion. Here, too, I think the calendar, I'm guessing that the calendar also around that time period began to get more set, and that's why they're having these discussions exactly about when we count from, and what's interesting, and I think why yesterday was a very convoluted sugya trying to explain the psukim, and is it time about this, time about that, we'll see in a minute also. I think that what's going on here is that in the time of the Tanakh, it wasn't so clear-cut. But the Amoraim are coming with their Amoraim glasses, and they're looking at the sugya with their organized fashion and trying to put organization consistency into the Tanakh, when really there was no consistency. Sometimes they counted this way, sometimes they counted that way. I don't think that the years, the way they're trying to look through their prism of their viewpoint. And it's not necessarily that that's the way the Tanakh was written. Right? It was written much more, oh, we'll count this year, we'll count that year. I don't know that they necessarily were always careful to count exactly from Nisan or count, right? But what's the issue? When the king starts to rule, so what do? You count from whenever he started. If he started in Sivan, then you start from Sivan. If he started from Tishrei, you start from Tishrei.
That was actually the question.
That was the question, yes. That was the question, and the answer is that we count from Nisan. What I want to suggest is that it's not so clear when they read the psukim that that's the way the psukim meant them to be read. In other words, the psukim weren't necessarily meant that way, but the Amoraim were reading the psukim through their viewpoint, through their understanding. Because just like when we come to the Gemara, we come with our viewpoint of our life experience and our perspective on life. And sometimes we read it differently than someone from a different time period might read it, or even a different... Right? And as women, we read it differently than men do. Everybody reads the text with their own viewpoint. And the Amoraim also read it with their viewpoint. So I think what's going on here is they're trying to establish a system, and they're trying to reread backwards when things weren't as established and try to read it into there. And that's why sometimes it gets a little convoluted here.
Okay. We saw how important the calendar was for that Amoraim with Yom Tov Sheni, that the whole reason that they kept it going is because they were afraid of losing the calendar.
Right.
So you see how important the calendar is.
Yes, and we're going to see the whole Masechet. Most of Masechet Rosh Hashanah is about the calendar. It's about how we set the calendar. I didn't give a good intro. We didn't start from the beginning of the Masechet. Anyway, the whole Masechet is talking about how we fix the calendar, what the meaning of the calendar is. We're going to get into all sorts of celestial issues. If you want to look, I have the Gemara with the pictures in the back. There's all sorts of pictures of planets and orbits and things like that. So we're going to get into this. So that's basically what Rosh Hashanah is really all about. Okay. So now, what we talked about last time was that the Rosh Hashanah Melachim for kings, we start counting for kings starting from Nisan. But then, Rav Chisda said, that's only Jewish kings, but non-Jewish kings, we start from Tishrei. And what I suggested was that maybe it has to do with the fact that Tishrei is a universal holiday, and it's the birth of the world, versus Nisan, which was our particular holiday given to us as a nation. So when we count from Nisan. When they count, they count from Tishrei. Then we said that, we had the question, we already did this yesterday, but we'll do it quickly again. Mativ Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, we have a problem with this theory. What's the problem with this theory? It says, B'yom asrim v'arba l'chodesh bashishi, b'shnat shtayim l'daryavesh, u'chtiv bashvi'i b'esrim v'echad l'chodesh. It says that Daryavesh, who was a non-Jewish king, right, he was living, he was, by the way, known to be, according to Chazal, and we'll, maybe this will connect with what we're saying, he was the son of Ahasuerus and Esther, okay? So, in fact, even though he was considered a non-Jewish king, if he's really Esther's son, which we don't really know, then he's Jewish, which we're going to see in a minute when they say something about him. But in any case, the understanding here is he wasn't Jewish. And it says, on the sixth month, in the second year of Daryavish's reign, and then afterwards it says, and in the seventh month, on the 21st of the month. If, specifically, in Tishrei, like we said, the non-Jewish kings would become, it would be their next year, when it moved from 6 to 7, it should have said, in the third year. And it doesn't say in the third year, it should have switched from the second to the third year, so it must be that it was still the same year. So Amar Rabbi Abau, so here we have a source that non-Jewish kings also started from Nisan. Amar Rabbi Abau, Koresh Melech Kasher Haya, Lefichach Manulo Kamalchei Yisrael. Some people say, by the way, that when it says he was a Melech Kasher, doesn't mean he was just a good king. Yesterday we discussed that he was a good king because, what did he do? Koresh issued the edict that they could go back to Eretz Yisrael, then, and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Then Ahasuerus came in between, and another Daryavish who wasn't good. They stopped the Jews from building. The whole story of Purim happened. And then Daryavish came, and he told them they could go back, and he reinstituted the Gzerah of Koresh. So they say he was a Melech Kasher. We're going to get to in a minute why it's calling him Koresh here when his name is Daryavish. But anyway, it says Melech Kasher. So some people say, why is he Kasher? Why Kasher? Why not Hagun? Why not some other word? Because he was Jewish. Kasher, he was really Jewish. You know, he wasn't really a non-Jewish king. He was really Jewish because he was the son of Esther. Matkifla Rav Yosef. So they say because he was Kasher, they counted like the Jewish kings. So now Matkifla Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef now has two problems. Chada de'im ken kashu kraya hadadeh. He says, you can't say they counted from Nisan like the Jewish kings because we have another problem with another pasuk. Dichtiv. B'shitza beit adana ad yom tlata liyarech adar, dihu shnat shit l'machut daryavash malka. Okay, they finished the building of the Beit HaMikdash until the 30th day of Adar. This was in the sixth year of the Malchut of Daryavash. Okay, if you look here, I made some charts here. Okay, here's the psukim from Ezra that we're reading now. If you count from Nisan, so the sixth year, it was Adar, right? That was the sixth year, and they're talking about the 11th month. It was Adar. Then what happens? Betanya, and the Brita says, Be'otozman l'shana ba'a la Ezra mi-Babel, v'galuto imo. The Brita says, a year later on that date, Ezra went to Babel. So that was year 7, month of Adar, right? Assuming that the month started in Nisan. Uchtiv v'yavo Yerushalayim b'chodesh ha-mechamishi. So after he comes on the in Adar, it says he came to Yerushalayim in the 5th month. He shnat ha-shvi'it la-melech. That was in the 7th year of the king. Now, according to what we just said, right, it would be the 8th year. V'imita, if it starts in Nisan, shanash hashmini mebaile, it should have been the 8th year. Okay, so now let's go look at the second chart I made here. If you count from Tishrei, what happens? He came in Adar, then he came exactly a year later in Adar. You see that? So this Tishrei, right, through Elul, that was the first year. He came in the middle of the year. The 7th year, he comes in Adar. That's when a year later, Ezra comes to Babel. And then in the 5th month, right, a few months later, within the same year, he then, it says he comes to Yerushalayim. Okay? So first he goes down Aliyah, then he comes to Yerushalayim. So what do you see here? That then it makes sense. It's in the 7th year, so what must be? That it starts from Tishrei. So on the one hand, we had the psukim the other guy brought that it starts in Nisan, and now we have this that says it starts in Tishrei. How do you reconcile that? And it was the same king they were discussing here. So now they say Va'od, and the second question is Midame, Hatzam Koresh, Hachar Daryavish. You said Koresh was a Melech Kasher, but we were talking about Daryavish, not Koresh. What's the connection? So first they answer the second question. Tana, who Koresh, who Daryavish, who are Tachshasta? Okay? These guys were all the same. They all have the same name. It was the same name. They called the same king. Okay? Koresh, Shemelech Kasher Haya. They called him Koresh because he was a Melech Kasher. He was a good king, just like Koresh was. So they called him in his name. Artachshasta al Shem Malchuto. That was the general, like the Paro name of all the kings of Mitzrayim were called Paro. Artachshasta was the name they called the Persian kings. Umashmo, Daryavishmo, and his real name was Daryavish. Mikomakom Kasher, but we still have this question that from the psukim we saw in Chagai, the first psukim that Rabbi Yosef brought, it sounds like you came from Nisan. In the second set of psukim, it sounds like you start from Tishrei. So we have an issue here. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak lo Kasher. Kan kodim shechmitz, kan la'achar shechmitz. Ah, now what do we say? Daryavish was a good king, but only for a while. What's shechmitz from chometz? What's chometz? It's wine that goes bad. Daryavish was a king that was good for a while, and then he turned sour. Okay, he turned against the Jews. So when they counted, like the Jewish kings, it was the time period when he was still a good king. When they count like the non-Jewish kings, it was because he turned bad, and then they started treating him like the non-Jewish kings and counting like that. Okay, like I said, this is a little convoluted, and it could be that it wasn't so clear-cut the way we're trying to make it clear-cut. This is where I was trying to say that it could be the Amoraim were looking through their vision and trying to fit everything together, but from the Pshat perspective, it doesn't really fit. Anyway, he says this is the case. Now, Matkif la Rav Kahana umi yachmitz. Did he really go bad? Okay, so they made this assumption he went bad, and that must be the explanation. So now they say, did he really go bad? Okay, the haktiv, uma chashchan. Okay, these are all psukim from Ezra that are in Aramaic. Okay, I'll read them in Aramaic, then I translated them on the sheets in English. So if you want to follow in English, you can follow there. Uma chashchan uvnei torin v'dichrin v'imrin la'alvin la'aleshmaya. Whatever the Kohanim needed, all the animals that they might need for their sacrifices, okay, to bring to their gods. Chinti melech chamar u'mushach, k'ma'amar kahana de b'Yerushalayim, lehavim mityav lahom yom b'yom. We're going to give it to them, okay? There's a whole list of wheat and salt and wine and oil, okay? Whatever the Kohanim say they need, we're going to give them, okay? Dilo shalu, okay? We're going to give them without fail. What do you see from here? Daryavish was clearly a good king, right? So now, what does he say? So how could you say Daryavish went bad? Here he went. He gave the Kohanim whatever they needed to sacrifice to their gods. So now we're going to have four possible answers. And this, if you categorize them, you'll see there are different categories of how a person, where people go wrong. Okay, what are general things that are that cause people to go wrong? Amar lo Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Mitunach, you're asking this question, Rav Kahana, of how could he be bad? If you look in that those same psukim, what do you see? It says right in the next pasuk, Di lahon mehakrivin nichochin le'elashmaya umatzrim l'chaim alku benohi. What does it say? Why were they giving the Kohanim everything? Because, says here, I'll read it in English, that they may sacrifice offerings of sweet savor to the God of heaven and pray for the life of the kings and his sons. They had ulterior motives. He gave them all they wanted so that they would pray for his peace. So he said, that was clearly he was selfish. It had nothing to do with him being a good king. He just wanted them to pray for him. I guess he had some sort of belief in their religion, but, you know, in those days, Avodah Zarah, right, people believed, let's try every method, right? Let's do everything. Let's pray to lots of gods. So it was all just for his own sake. It wasn't because he was being a nice guy. He was just interested in his own self-interest. So now the Gemara asks a good question on this. Umanda ava, is it necessarily a bad thing that he prayed for, he asked them to pray for him? Is that a bad thing? That's what the Gemara is going to ask him. Umanda avid hachi lavma al yutahi? It's not a good thing that he gave them stuff so they would pray for him? Vaha tanya, it says in a braita. Ha omer, if you come and you say, Sela zo litzdaka, b'shvil shechyu banai, u'b'shvil she'ezkeba l'chayei olam haba. If you say, I'm giving this money to tzedakah so my kids live a long life, or so that I get olam haba, harei zeh tzadik gamur. not only is it not a bad thing to do, you're a real tzaddik. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with doing things for your own, right? You're doing something good. So what if, you know, okay, so you want it, it's for your own benefit, but who said there's something wrong? Right, it's human nature. But who said there's something wrong with doing things so that you live a long life? That's a nice thing. So if he wanted to do it, right, there's nothing wrong with doing that, basically. So it's not a bad guy. So now what do they say? Lo kasha, kam bi Yisrael, kam ba ovdei kochavim. For Jews, it's a good thing to do that. For non-Jews, it's a bad thing to do that. This is a bit of a difficult statement. So the explanation given, if you look in Rashi, Rashi says, kam bi Yisrael shalibo l'shamayim, that his heart is to God. What if you say that, right? Let's say you say, I'm giving tzedakah so that I get a long life. And then what happens? You die young, okay? Obviously, once you die, you're not going to be asking questions. But let's assume, yeah, whatever. You do it for conditional upon something. And then it doesn't happen. So you don't lose your belief in God generally. You were kind of hoping this would help, but it didn't. You still have belief. If the non-Jew told the Jews, pray for me, and then something happened to him, and it didn't go very well, he'd get angry at God and say, oh, what's this God, and throw him out the window. That's the concept. So for non-Jews, it's a problem to do that kind of thing, because it's like they're dependent on it. But for Jews, it's okay to do that. Again, you can question that, but okay, that's the explanation. So, now what do we have? So we have one proof that he went bad, because what did he do? He gave them stuff just so that they would pray for him, which now we're considering is not necessarily a positive thing. V'ibayt ema, and another explanation, minalan di'ichmit, di'chtiv, nidbachim di'evin, okay, here again, you can look in the English, okay, it's in Tirutz number 2. Nidbachim di'evin galal tlata, v'nidbach di'ah chadat, v'nifkata min be'et malka titya'ev. Okay, so here it says, what did he do? He built the Beit HaMikdash with three rows of great stones and a row of new timber. Why did he do that? Lama le David hachi, savar, he thought to himself, imar dubi Yehudai, ikliye benura. If they go against me, I'll light it up on fire. So he specifically added timber, because timber will burn quickly. So he specifically added timber when he built the Beit HaMikdash, and he helped, you know, he gave them stuff to build the Beit HaMikdash with. So that, okay, here you have the military reason, right? This is a military tactic. So then in the event that he'd need to, he'd be able to burn it quickly. So now they say, is that such a bad thing to put wood in the Beit HaMikdash? Atu Shlomo lo avid hachi? What, didn't Shlomo use trees when he was building the Beit HaMikdash? Wood. V'haktiv shloshatu regazit v'tur krutot arazim. Okay, he had three rows of
cedar.
No, the arazim or cedar. What's the gazit? What? Hoon stone. Okay, so again, the three rows of hoon stone, the same thing. And a row of the cedar trees. So what do they say? Shlomo, it's true, they each have three rows in one row, but there were three differences, okay? In which case, Shlomo, we're going to see in a minute, Shlomo used his wood in a way that wouldn't burn quickly, and the other king did it in a way, Dariavish did it in a way that it was going to burn quickly. Shlomo, avi milamala, vi'iu avi milamata. Shlomo put the wood at the very top. So in the worst case, the top row burns, but the stones are underneath, and they'll protect the whole thing from burning. But he put it underneath. So you burn the wood at the bottom, and the whole thing will be destroyed. Shlomo shake bibinyana. Shlomo buried it inside, like he put it, it was recessed, or it was, I think like,
it was recessed.
Okay, it was recessed within the building. Ihu lo shake bibinyana, it wasn't recessed, it was exposed, in which case it would burn also easier. Shlomo sadye besida, he put limestone over it, again, to protect it from lighting on fire. Ihu lo sadye besida, and he didn't. Okay, so that's answer number 2, military. Rabbi Yosef, itemar Rabbi Yitzchak, we're going to see 4 answers. Minalan de ichmitz, so now Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Yitzchak says, from where do we know? Mehacha. Vayomer li hamelech, v'hashegel yoshevet etzlo. We saw this pasuk yesterday. The king said it, and the queen was sitting next to him.
Right.
Now they say, what?
I remember.
Okay, so now they say, what is shegel? Okay, Ma Shega. I wanted, before we even start, I wanted to point out, this is called the BDB. It's the Hebrew and English Lexicon of the Old Testament. It's the best dictionary from an academic perspective of the Tanakh. So I figured, let me go look up this root. This root, by the way, comes up, I don't know if you've ever noticed, there's kriyuchtiv, you know, sometimes where it says one thing. This is a root, this word, comes up a lot, tishagelna, tishakavna, and it sounds familiar to anyone. It comes up in some of the Haftorahs where it's taken out, this word, because this word is a really bad word, okay? It's like profanity. So the way they translate this word, there's two explanations, and we're going to see that these two explanations, right, it's very often where the root of a word, right, causes the word to be understood in a different way, because this is the root, it then comes up with different interpretations. What we're going to have here is an argument about exactly what this word means and where it comes from. So if you look here, there's two explanations. One is a noun, one is a verb. Shagel is a noun, is to violate or to ravish. Okay, the woman shall be ravished. That's clearly a negative connotation. And as a noun, it's the queen, okay, or a consort. So you see here that, again, it could be in connection that the queens were sometimes treated very poorly, right? And that's maybe how the word came about. So now they're going to say, why did it use the word shegal instead of malka, if that was really the meaning? Okay, so yesterday we translate this as the queen. Now the Gemara is going to say, my shegal, Amarabba bar lima mishmei de Rav, Rabba lima said in the name of Rav, kalbata, it was a dog. Now not only was it a dog, but it was a dog that he was having sexual relations with. Okay, that was the concept. And it comes from the meaning of the word, of it being a real profane word. It's an inappropriate word. It must be, it was something inappropriate. So now they say, elameata hadichtiv, but now they're going to bring psukim that make it difficult to translate shegal as a dog. Okay, it says in the pasuk, in Daniel, it says, v'amar ishmai hitromamta. Okay, again, I put it, it's at the very bottom of this page, and you see it in English. Okay, you've lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. Ulamanya dibete, ulamanya dibete haitiv, kadamach, v'ant v'rav v'nach shegalatach, ulachenatach, chamr shatim bahon. Okay, what are they saying? That you brought the vessels of God's house before you, and you and your lords, your consorts, and your concubines have drunk wine in them. So what do you see? Ishagel kalbatahi. Kalbata mbat mishya chamrahi. What? Dogs drink wine? It can't possibly be that it must be the queen, right? That the queen was sitting there drinking wine. Ah, halokasha. Demalfalava shakya. It's not a question. They trained the dog to drink wine. Okay? And the dogs are drinking wine. It's interesting also here, again, it's this concept of it must be all the same, right? They want to line everything up. It can't be that shegal in one place means this and another place means that, right? Like as you see here in the BDB, they have two different explanations of shegal. Sometimes it means ravished and along those lines. Sometimes it means queen. But they want to kind of work them all in together. Elameata dichtiv, now they're going to bring another pasuk. Benot melachim, okay, this is a pasuk from Tehillim. Okay, benot melachim, Bikrotecha nitzva, nitzva shegal yiminecha beketem ofir. The queen was put to your right with a ketem ofir, right? The daughters of kings are your favorites, and upon your right hand is this queen, right? It must be a queen, right? V'i shegal kalbatehi, my kind of mevaschelu nabi Yisrael. This is like a beautiful image of the queen standing to your right, the daughters of the kings are there, right? It's a beautiful image. How could you say that Shegal is a dog? It doesn't make any sense. It wouldn't be a bracha to Yisrael. This is what's going to happen. So now what do they say? Ah, no, we can explain this too. Hachi kamar. Bischar shechaviva Torah Yisrael, kishegal ovde kochavim. Zachitam leketem ofir. Just like the non-Jews treat their dog is so important to them, so the queen, right? So you treat the Torah. That you treat the Torah like they treat the Shegal. Okay? Not a great explanation, but okay. And because of that, you get this ketem ofir. V'i bayit ema lo'olam Shegal malchitahi v'rabba berlima gemar gevirla. It could be that Shegal is always a queen, but Rabba berlima had a mesoret that it was a dog in this pasuk. In other words, yes, it's generally meant to be that, but there was some assert that he had that it's a dog, and just in this pasuk, Pamai Kari LeShegal, Shaita Chaviva Alav Kishegal. Why did he call it a queen? Because the dog was so precious to him like a queen, and what does that show us again? We're going back to our answer. That shows us that he went off the path, right? Inami, Shoshiba Bimkom Shegal. Maybe he put the dog in the place of the queen. Okay, he had this dog he was having relations with, and it took the place of the queen. Okay, now that answer you would obviously category as the sexual promiscuity category, right? Which also leads people wrong. Ibai Dema, the last one. Now we're going to get to financial one. Okay, money, the other thing that leads people off. Ibai Dema minalan deichmit mehacha ad kesef kikrim mea va'ad chantin kurim mea va'ad chamer batin mea. Va'ad batin meshach mea umelach dilo kata v'chule. What happened? In the beginning, what did we say? He gave the kohanim everything they needed. At a later point, he gave them a certain amount of everything. So say, oh, what do you see? In the beginning, it was whatever they wanted. As time went on, he cut it down into certain amounts. So what did they say? Mi'ikar below kitzuta v'hashta b'kitzuta. In the beginning, it was plentiful. And after, he gave them only particular amounts. You see, he went wrong. So again, it was, right, he cut back his financial support. He wasn't willing to give them so much money anymore. Now the Gemara rejects this. And the Gemara says, V'dilma me'ikar lo havakamle b'kitzuta. As it could be, he didn't know how much they needed. In the beginning, he said, take whatever you want. As time went on, he learned how much they needed, and this was the amount he gave them. It's not necessarily that he cut down the amount, it's just he figured out. Now he knew exactly how much to give them. Of course, you have to wonder why the pasuk would bother to tell us this, but okay. So then the Gemara says, so we reject this last answer. So it must be the way we learned it in the first place. Okay, so this was all to tell us that Daryavish, we had this contradiction, right? We'll start off again. Rav Chisda said that the Machay Yisrael count from Nisan, the Machay Goyim count from Tishrei. We had this problem with Daryavish, that sometimes it seemed to count from Nisan, sometimes it seemed to count from Tishrei. We answered up saying, part of his life he was good, part of his life he was bad, and it depended on which part of his life we were talking about, which is interesting just in terms of the whole reason that the Gemara talked about we have to count from a particular month so we don't cause confusion. This clearly caused confusion, right? Okay. The other question, which I don't have a good answer to, but it's definitely a good question, is when it talks about the kings here and that we're... What's the relevance? The Gemara says the relevance of Lemelachim, we didn't learn this was on the first daf, is for the shtarot, for their documents. Now, what kings are living in that time that they're counting, that they're talking about documents, right? If we're talking about our halakhic documents that we're writing, right? You write on your shtar what month you sold your property, and then the whole question is, there was a lien on your property from before that date. It's very important to know what date exactly. What kings are we referring to? Were there kings in that time, right? There weren't kings like Malchei Yisrael, so... That's a big question here. I don't have a great answer. Safraina's book talks about the Malchei Cheshmonaim. I don't know exactly how late there were kings of the Cheshmonaim. Maybe still in the time of the Mishnah there were, and that's what they're referring to. If you say Rashi seems to indicate, and there's a big problem with Rashi, that it was talking about the other nations. In other words, when people wrote documents, just like we write documents on a Lazi date, right? We write 2014. We don't write... sometimes we do, but usually we don't write the Hebrew date. So it could be that, but then it contradicts this whole Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda said, we're not, right? Tosfot jumps on Rashi and says, how can you say that? Because really it's talking about, Rav Chisda said, the dates are counted differently for the non-Jewish kings and the Jewish kings. So if you're talking about a non-Jewish calendar, well then it would go by Tishrei and not by Nisan. So I don't know how Rashi says it. It's more of a better question. I don't have a great answer to it. Okay, now we're going to move on to the second part of the Mishnah, where they talk about that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah for the Regalim. Okay, for the holidays. Now, the question is going to be, just like we asked with the first one, really, what's the relevance? What's the halakhic relevance of having a Rosh Hashanah the Regalim? But first we have another question. Regalim b'echad b'nisan hu? B'chamishasar b'nisan hu? The first holiday doesn't come out on the 1st of Nisan. When is the first holiday? On the 15th of Nisan, Pesach. So it shouldn't be that the 1st of Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah, the Regalim. It should be in the beginning of the first holiday, right? Which is the 15th of Nisan. Amar Rav Chisda, Regal Shebo Rosh Hashanah, the Regalim. It means the holiday, right? That it's within right? The one that's in the month of the Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim, meaning it starts with Pesach, even though it's considered that we start from the beginning of the month. Nafka mina, what's the relevance now? The Gemara wants to know, what's the relevance of this halacha? Anybody who learned Beitza, now we're going to have a very good review of a whole sugya that we learned there about Baal Ta'acher. Okay, what is Baal Ta'acher? If you say, I'm going to bring a sacrifice, okay, here I brought some psukim. If you look at the bottom here, from Dvarim Perakaf Gimel, on the bottom of the second half of the page, Kiti Dor Neder L'Hashem Elokecha, if you say, I'm going to bring something to the Beit HaMikdash, Lo Ta'acher L'Shamo, you can't delay it. You have to bring it in a timely fashion. Again, you have to remember that you're living in your house in Tzfat or wherever, right? You say, I promise to give this to God. You're not going to bring it immediately. You don't live near the Beit HaMikdash. When are you most likely to bring it? Holidays, when you go up to the Beit HaMikdash. So now the question is, what does it mean, lo ta'acher l'shamo? Until when do you have? The first holiday that comes up, the second, the third? We're going to see all different options. Okay. So now they say, so what does it mean, Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim? L'mei kamalei b'bal ta'achir. The Rebbe Shimon here, and it goes according to Rebbe Shimon, D'Tanya, Echad ha-noder ve'echad ha-makdish ve'echad ha-marich, keivan she'avru alav shlosha regalim, over b'bal ta'achir. If you make a neder, a promise, I'm going to bring this to the Beit HaMikdash. You say, this is going to be hektish. I'm dedicating this to the Beit HaMikdash. You say, I'm giving the value of myself, or I'm giving the value of my child, or I'm giving the value of a person to the Beit HaMikdash. You have to do that. When do you have to do it? According to Rabbi Shimon, you have three holidays. Okay? Now, Rabbi Shimon, that's Tanakama. Sorry, Tanakama says that. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shlosha regalim kisidran v'chag ha-matzot tchila. It's according to their order. What does it mean, Rosh Hashanah regalim? Not that you have three holidays whenever you're up to. Let's say it's right after Shavuot. So you get Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot. So now, what does he say? He says, you get the three holidays in order. Chag HaMatzot is the first. That's what it means. It's Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim. So let's say you do it after Shavuot. What do you get? You have Sukkot. Then you get a whole another cycle. You get Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. You have over a year to do it, basically, because Baal Ta'acher is only after you've gone over three holidays in their order. Okay, and what's their order? That's what the Mishnah is telling us. Their order is starting from Pesach. So you have Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Okay? And you're only over Baal Ta'acher after you run through a whole cycle in order. So if you come and you make a neder after Pesach, for example, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 holidays to do it. Okay? Because you have to, in order to be... This, again, it just means how long do you have? How much potential do you have?
Me. I am. Okay.
So how much do you have, right? How much time do you have to bring it before you are over on this Isur of Baal Ta'acher? So now, that's Rabbi Shimon. So they say, our Mishnah must be according to Rabbi Shimon, who has this opinion, and that's why it says it's Rosh Hashanah L'Regalim. V'chein haya Rabbi Shimon v'yochai omer, Regalim, pa'amim shlosha, pa'amim arba'a, pa'amim chamisha. Right? Depends. It could be three holidays, four holidays, or five holidays. Take that. Nadar lifnei Pesach shlosha. Right? If you do it before Pesach, you have 1, 2, 3. Lifnei atzeret, atzeret shavuot, hamisha. Lifnei achag, arba'a. Okay? Tanu Rabbanan. So now we're going to get into some things about this issue. Chayavei hadamin, v'herachim, v'achermim, v'hakdeshot, chata'ov ashamot, olod ushlamim, stakot umasro, b'chur maser, u'pesach, leket shechecha u'pea, these are all sorts of things that you have a certain amount of time to give them, okay? Damim are when you say I give the value of someone, rather than erchin is I give their value, damim is I give their shobi kaspi. What's the difference? If you say you give someone damim, then you pay for how much they would be sold as a slave in the shuk. If you say you give their erchin, there's already specific erchin in the Torah that are given, and you go according to that. It depends if you're a man or a woman, it depends how old you are. And that's already given in the Torah and not based on what's in the shuk. Cherem is when you say this is cherem. It could be it goes to the coin, it could be it goes to the Beit HaMikdash. The hektesh, which is you say this is going to be hektesh. A chatad and an asham, these are when you're chayav korbanot to bring for various things that you do in Olan, Shlamim, all different. We're not going to get into everything because of time. Tzedakah, Maser, Bechor, Maser, okay, all sorts of things. Like a Shulchan Peah. Okay, they say, what do you mean like a Shulchan Peah? Don't you leave them in the field? So this is if he took them from the field and said, I'm going to give them to poor people. Okay, once he picked them up, then he has to give them. So Kevran Shavua Lehen Shlosha Regalim Ober Bebal Tzachir. We're now going to see that there's a lot of different opinions about this. Okay, the first opinion says, as soon as three regalim pass, doesn't matter what you're up to, right? Wherever you are in the calendar, you have three regalim. Rabbi Shimon Omer, okay, this is just a review of what we saw before. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shlosha Regalim Kisidram B'chag HaMatzot Tchila. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kevan Sha'avar Alehem Regal Echad Over B'Bal Ta'acher. All you have is one chance. The next regal, that's what you got. Pass that, you've missed your chance. In another minute, we're going to get to what their reasons are. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Kevan Shavu Alehem Shnei Regalim Over B'Bal Ta'acher. You get two. So we see we have all possibilities. One, two, three, or Lefi HaSeder, right? In order. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon Omer, and now we have a fifth. Kevan she'avar lehem chag ha'sukot over lehem bebal ta'acher. He says, so this is the magical holiday, let's call it, right? Or the, magical, but it's the unique one. If you pass Sukkot, it doesn't matter. If you did it between Shavuot and Sukkot, all you have is Sukkot. If you did it after Sukkot, you get all three. Sukkot is the one. We're going to see in a minute where he gets this. Okay, my time at the Tana comes. So now we're going to go again. I put this all on the chart, so if that helps you, you can follow there. My time at the... Sorry, I lost my place for a second. Okay, my time at the Tana Kama. Michtim... Okay, now, in order to understand all of their reasons, we're going to look at these psukim that I brought at the bottom of the page. In Devarim Perek Tet Zayin, when it talks about the holidays, it says... It talks about Chag HaSukkot, Haselech HaShivat Yamim, Vasfacha Migar Nechal Miyikvecha. Okay? Then... After it's talking about Chag HaSukkot, it starts with Chag HaSukkot, and then it says, Shalosh pamim b'shana yireh kol zorcha p'nei Hashem Elokecha, right? Three times a year, you should go to the Beit HaMikdash. And then it says, B'chag HaMatzot, B'chag HaShavuot, B'chag HaSukkot, which is repetitive, because it already says three times a year. We know it's three times a year. It doesn't need to specifically highlight those. And then, we're going to see also, what else doesn't it need? Even if you'd say, maybe you forgot what they are, it certainly doesn't need to say Chag HaSukkot, because it already said Chag HaSukkot and Pasuk Yud-Gimel. So Chag HaSukkot is really unnecessary, and there you're going to see, that's the opinion of Chag HaSukkot, where it comes from. So, let's see. So Tana Kama says, Michti mina yusalik lama li lameh hadar lamichtab b'chag HaMatzot v'chag HaShavuot v'chag HaSukkot. It was already talking about the three holidays, so why does it have to specifically say those three holidays? Again, why does it have to say them by name? Shema mina labal ta'achir. It's coming to teach you the halacha, even though that wasn't the case here, right? The Torah is talking here about Aliyah LaRegel, but since it's talking about Aliyah LaRegel, what's it coming to tell you? That when you go to Aliyah LaRegel, make sure to do your nidarim. And if you don't do them, you have these three holidays, meaning you have a cycle, a full cycle. That's what Tana Kama says. For Rabbi Shimon, who said they have to be in their order, what does he say? Eino tzarich lomar b'chag HaSukkot, shebo diber ha-katuv. It didn't need to say Chag HaSukkot because it was already talking about Chag HaSukkot, and it's unnecessary. Lama ne'emar lomar shezeh acharon. What does that teach you? That this was the last, meaning that they have to be in their order. It has to be Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and that's where he gets his opinion. Rabbi Meir, my time, Dichtiv, Ubata Shama Vehevetem Shama. He says the Pasuk, right, if you look in the Pasuk, it's, if you have it on the side here, it's from Dvarim Perik Yubet, it says, Ki Hashem, right, the place where God chooses, L'shifnoti Jeshu Ubata Shama, you should go there, Vehebeta Shama, and when you go there, what should you do? You should bring your olot, vizibchaychem, vet masrotechem, vet shumat yitchem, vinidrechem, vinidvotechem, ubechoropachem, right? All those things you're supposed to bring. Because it says, ubata shama vehebeta shama, what does it mean? As soon as you get there, you have to bring it. Meaning, you just get one chance. That's your chance. So now, what do Chachamim say about that? The people who disagree with him, why don't they say that? So, v'rabanan, hahula ase. This, if you notice, what does it say? It says you should go there and bring them. That is a mitzvah to say. It doesn't say you can't not bring them, right? It doesn't say it in the negative. So what do they say? Yes, it's true. There's a special mitzvah to say to do it the first holiday you get there, but you're not transgressing the prohibition of Baal Ta'achir, of doing it late, if you miss your chance. In other words, you don't get just one chance. You get one chance. The first chance you get, that's a kiyum mitzvah. You should do the mitzvah, do it as soon as possible. But if you don't, you still have a second chance, or a third chance, depending on who you are and what you say. Or a fifth chance, right? And it depends on your opinion. For Rabbi Meir, so how does Rabbi Meir respond to his, right, to Rabbanan's retort, saying it's mitzvah aseh? Kevanda amalu rachmana aite, velo aite, mimela kamle bebal ta'acher. If the rabbis tell you bring it and you didn't bring it, or if the Torah tells you bring it and you didn't bring it, you obviously transgress the prohibition. That's what he says. He says the aseh and melot aseh are clearly intertwined. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, my time, dichtiv, ele ta'asu la'Hashem b'mo'adechem. This is what you should bring, yeah, you should do this for God on his holidays. What does it mean, holidays? Miu mo'adim, whenever you have a plural in the Torah, what do we assume? How much? Shnaim, it must be two, and that's why he says you get two holidays. The Rabbanan, what do Rabbanan say? What's this b'mo'adechem if they're not learning two holidays? You know, they say three or four or five. Hahu lechidu Rabbi Yona, the Amar Rabbi Yona, who kshu kol ha'moadim kulam zelaze, shekulam mechaprim al tumat mikdash v'kodashav. There's this Seiri Zim lechatat that you bring on all the holidays. Now, it was clear that one of them, I think it was on Rosh Chodesh, is to be mechaper on if you came tameh to the Beit Hamikdash or you brought a kli tameh to the Beit Hamikdash. This chatat would be mechaper. So what they're saying, the reason it says, Ele tasu lachem b'mo'adechem, it means that all the holidays are the same in that when you bring that chatat, it atones for those who came tameh to the Beit HaMikdash or brought something impure to the Beit HaMikdash, and that atones for all your sins. It's coming to teach a totally different halacha, and therefore you can't learn from it to Baal Ta'achir. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, my time, huh? Titania, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Omer, Lo Yomar Chagas Sukkot Shabo Dibera Katuv, Lama Ne'emar. Okay, now we're going back to where Rabbi Shimon said, Chagas Sukkot is extra in the Pasuk. He said it means that that's the last, meaning it has to be in order. Comes Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, his son, Derech Agav, right? He goes according to his father's thinking, but he takes it a different way. And he says, why does it say Chagas Sukkot? To say Shezegorim. That's the one. Only Chagas Sukkot is the one that's Baal Ta'achir. Okay, but Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar, Ben Yaakov, we're going to end here. Now, what do you have the question? Until now, we answered, why does it say Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaShavuot, Chag HaSukkot in the Pasuk according to Rabbi Shimon and according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, right? Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, it says Chag HaSukkot, even though it's unnecessary, it says it because it means Chag HaSukkot is the one. Rabbi Shimon said, it's to teach you that Chag HaSukkot is the last. It has to go through Pesach, Shavuot, and then Sukkot. And now, what does Hai b'chag ha'masel b'chag shavuot b'chag sukkot mar darshu be? What do the others do with that pasuk? Because really, those words are unnecessary. So, what do they say? It teaches you a different halacha. Mibay aluhu lechid Rabbi Elazar amar Rabbi Yoshaya for something that Rabbi Elazar taught in the name of Rabbi Yoshaya. De amar Rabbi Elazar amar Rabbi Yoshaya minayim la'atzeret sheyesh la'tashlumin kol shiva. Tamud lomar b'chag ha'masel b'chag shavuot b'chag sukkot mekish chag ha'shavuot l'chag ha'masel. Ma chag ha'matzot yesh lo tashlumin kol shiva. Af shavuot yesh lo tashlumin kol shiva. We're going to end here. I'm just going to explain this, and then tomorrow we'll restart from here, and we'll get to a question on this. What do they say? It comes to teach you an entirely different halacha. What's the halacha? When you go up for the holidays to the Beit HaMikdash, what happens? Everybody can't bring their sacrifice on the first day. So what do they say? You have all the days of the holiday to make up that sacrifice of the first day. Okay? You have, right, because the first day had a special sacrifice for Yantif. So now, you have a second chance, a third chance, right? You have all the days of the holiday. What about Shavuot? You don't have a whole holiday, right? You have one day. So what did they learn? From the fact that they put all these words in the Pasuk together, they say it teaches you that Shavuot is just like Chag HaMatzot. Just like on Pesach, you have 7 days to make up the sacrifice. Also on Shavuot, you have 7 days to make up the sacrifice. Derech Agav, where do we see this in Halacha nowadays? Tachanun. That you say after Shemona Esrei, there's days that you don't say Tachanun because they're happy days, they're holiday days. So the days after Shavuot, those 7 days of Tashlumim, we don't say Tachanun because it has a semi-status of Chag. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
is this referring to just Korban Chagiga, or?
I think it's the Korban Chagiga only. I would imagine. Yeah. I think that because it's the Chagiga of the first day. Yeah. So tomorrow they're going to ask, why don't we learn it from Sukkot, which has 8 days, and that's 7 days. And then we're going to talk about, which we've discussed many times already, for those of you who are new, we'll learn it from the first time, which is, what's the difference between the 8th day of Sukkot to the 7th day of Pesach, right? Because they're both Chag at the end of the Chag, right? They're both Yantif at the end of the Chag. But the eighth day is considered an entity within itself. It's not continued with the holiday. And we're going to learn that according to this opinion, Tashlumin doesn't apply on the eighth day. You can't do Tashlumin for Sukkot on the eighth day. Because first they're going to say, maybe you should learn from Shavuot 8 days and not 7 days. Right? Because maybe we'll learn it from Sukkot. So we'll get to that tomorrow.